Radio Prague News.
The government has created a special working group to deal with Brexit. The Czech Prime Minister has warned of a new wave of nationalism and separatism, and homage is paid to the victims of communism on the 66th anniversary of the death of Milada Horáková. The Czech government has decided to create a special working group to deal with the possible implications of Brexit, the result of last week's British referendum decision to leave the EU. The group will be headed by the Secretary of State for European Affairs, Tomáš Prouza. It will mainly focus on determining the Czech priorities in the upcoming negotiation with Britain. Prime Minister Bohuslav Sobotka announced the step on his Twitter account. The Czech Prime Minister said he fears that there will be a new wave of separatism following the British Brexit vote. Speaking in an interview with Austrian paper Der Standard, Bohuslav Sobotka said the British vote would probably encourage nationalism and separatism. He maintained that the European project is still the best guarantee that the horrors of the 20th century are not repeated. The Czech Prime Minister warned, though, that the EU should reform itself so it can be more effective, more flexible and less bureaucratic. Foreign Minister Lubomir Zaorálek said after a meeting of foreign ministers from the Visegrad 4, as well as France and Germany, that Britain's exit should not stop the EU's evolution. He said new relations with Britain should be on friendly terms. Zaorálek added that rapid further EU steps towards integration would be the wrong response to the British referendum result. The Czech state spending watchdog, the National Audit Office, has concluded in a report that awareness among most Czechs of how EU funds were spent and the existence of various operational programmes had not increased in spite of the hundreds of millions of crowns spent by ministries to publicise them. The office said around 250 million crowns were spent between 2008 and 2015. Around half that total was spent on a series of TV spots, which the office said offered hardly any basic information. The Ministries of Labour and Social Affairs, Regional Development and Education were the biggest spenders on publicity material. The government has decided to relax the rules for nursing sisters to qualify in the future in a move that's being described as a step towards the stabilisation of the health sector. In what's been described as the 4+1 formula, sisters will in future have to undergo 1 year of special training after 4 years of high school. In the past, they were expected to undergo the equivalent of 3 years of bachelor studies. And Deputy Prime Minister Pavel Bělobrádek has paid homage on behalf of the government to the victims of communism. The leader of the Christian Democrats laid a wreath at a memorial in Prague 5 district. Monday is the 66th anniversary of the execution of Milada Horáková, the woman member of parliament found guilty in a show trial in 1950, staged by the communist regime. The death penalty was carried out in spite of last-minute pleas for clemency from the likes of Albert Einstein and the Pope. I'm Chris Johnston. That was the news.
You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Ruth Franíková. Coming up in today's programme, Brexit must not halt the development of the European Union, says Foreign Minister Lubomír Zaorálek. We have the roundup of the latest Czech sports news. And later on in the programme, political scientist Gregor Ekiert tells us the Visegrad 4's main challenge today is to avoid ending up on the periphery of a changing EU. All that coming up, so please stay with us. The planned departure of the United Kingdom will not halt the development of the European Union, but the rest of the bloc must work harder to convince the publics of its merits. That was the message from Czech Foreign Minister Lubomír Zaorálek after a meeting in Prague on Monday with his counterparts from the other Visegrad states, Germany and France. Ian Willoughby reports.
European leaders have been holding a flurry of talks on Monday as they grapple with the fallout of UK voters' seismic decision to quit the European Union. Here in Prague, the Minister of Foreign Affairs, Lubomír Zaorálek, hosted hastily arranged talks on the issue with his counterparts from the other Visegrad states, Poland, Slovakia and Hungary, and Germany and France. The Czech foreign policy chief said he was speaking for all participants in the meeting when the six ministers appeared before journalists at the Černín Palace.
Rozhodnutí Britů v referendu o vystoupení z Evropské unie je věc vážná.
The decision by the British people in a referendum is a serious matter. We regret it. But at the same time, it is something that cannot and will not halt the future development of the European Union. We agreed at our meeting today that the EU is a project that we badly need for our lives. And we are ready to do everything we can to ensure that project carries on successfully.
Mr. Tsar Alex said member states needed to hold a debate on what kind of European Union they want in future and to think hard about the best route forward for the bloc.
After what we have seen, a bad response would be rapid integration, hasty integration, and a bad response would be to pretend nothing had happened. We are ready to continue with integration in places where we all need it urgently and are able to explain it to the people. And we're also ready to do all we can so that individual EU states can pursue policies capable of finding favor with the public and win public support.
Monday's meeting precedes a much-anticipated summit of all EU leaders, except Britain's David Cameron, in Brussels on Tuesday. Prior to the Prague talks, Lubomir Zaharalek made a forthright call on the President of the European Commission, Jean-Claude Juncker, to step down over his responsibility for the outcome of the Brexit referendum. Mr. Juncker is not the right man for the job, the Czech foreign policy chief told Czech television.
Ian Willoughby with that report. Prior to the Czech Republic's joining the European Union in 2004, the country committed to adopting the European currency. But since, the time frame has been pushed back, with estimates suggesting the Czechs would not adopt the euro any time before 2020. The Brexit, Great Britain's decision last week to withdraw from the bloc, may push back adoption even further. Jan Wellinger has the details.
Czech adoption of the euro is something which not that long ago was pushed with some determination by the country's president and somewhat more cautiously by the government. The question now is how much the Czech Republic will keep it within its sights or whether adoption will be pushed back further following the earthquake that is the Brexit. Some analysts are without a doubt that delay will be the outcome, but others have argued that with the increased roles for Germany and France following the UK's departure, it will be more important than ever for the Czech Republic to join the eurozone. Former Foreign Minister Cyril Svoboda told Czech Radio the country would do well to get on board.
I think that the proper reaction to Brexit is to join the eurozone and to strengthen the European Union, because, in my view, the bloc will return to its six founding members, the Benelux, Italy, France and Germany. It will be a call for other member states to join the hardcore or instead to orbit just outside, which is dangerous for the Czech Republic. What is important is for us to find a joint route with the six founding members.
Radek Špicar, Vice President of the Confederation of Industry of the Czech Republic, agrees that the Czechs should seize the opportunity presented.
I'm afraid that Brexit will see the eurozone now strengthen, and that the European motor, and by that I mean above all the German and French alliance, will now be more active and will decide on the new direction of European integration. I think that it would truly not be in the Czech Republic's favour to not be there. That means together with the hardcore, which includes the eurozone.
Others are not so optimistic the Czech Republic can position itself so quickly, saying that Brexit will, or perhaps should, push adoption of the euro back. Communist Party leader Vojtěch Filip told Czech Radio that he was against the country speeding up entry to the eurozone, even if all criteria were met, suggesting the matter needed to be viewed through the prism of national interests. Some are taking the view that for the moment the EU faces such an array of issues in the wake of Brexit that euro adoption is not the first order of the day. Industry and Trade Minister Jan Mládek.
That means another delay of the Czech adoption of the currency, because the rest of the bloc is now discussing many other problems and will not be discussing the enlargement of the eurozone.
In Industry and Trade Minister Jan Mladek ending that report by Jan Wellinger. And Jan stays in the studio with the roundup of the latest Czech sports news.
Okay, and it's time for the sport, and this time we look at the Olympics. Members of the Czech road cycling team set to travel to the upcoming Summer Olympics in Rio have been announced, and they include three Olympic rookies: Leopold Koenig, Zdeněk Škybar, and Petr Vakoč. The final spot on the team will belong to Jan Bárta, who has competed at the Games before. The nominees were announced by the team manager, making clear that the Czech squad will be without the highly respected road racer and fresh Czech champion Roman Kreuziger, who did compete in the last two Olympics. This time around, though, Kreuziger opted for upcoming races on the European circuit instead.
To
give up the Olympic Games once every 4 years is not an easy decision, but the preparations would be so intense that I would not be able to prepare properly for both, neither the Olympics nor Vuelta. That would not be good for the national team, where the guys have to put in 100%, while I need to go 100% at the Vuelta.
Even without the rider, coach Tomáš Konečný expressed the hope that the Czech road cycling team will do well at Rio.
Leo Koenig earned the one free spot in the time trial on Thursday. Jan Bárta, who's been one of the best competitors in championships over the last 5 years, was second, and I think he will be successful in Rio.
Now, keeping fingers crossed there for the Czech road cycling team. Turning now to hockey, even though it is now the off-season or the summer break, veteran star Jaromír Jágr has plenty to cheer about. He was crowned the Czech Hockey Player of the Year at the weekend, receiving the Golden Hockey Stick. He was the third most productive player in NHL history, and at 44, he has been awarded the prize for the 12th time. A special ceremony was held in Karlovy Vary on Saturday night. Jágr said that he had first been in the 10 best in the Golden Hockey Stick way back in 1990, and that it remained a huge honor for him to get the award. And finally, we turn to tennis and the draw at Wimbledon. Czech tennis player Tomáš Berdych faces Croatia Ivan Dodig. That's in the first round. Radek Štěpánek, who received a wild card in the tournament, is playing Australia's Nick Kyrgios in the opening match. As for the women, in the women's singles, the 10th-seeded double Wimbledon champion Petra Kvitová will play Sorana Sirsteia of Romania.
Jan Wellinger with the roundup of the latest Czech sports news. Just a reminder that you're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. Now, in the last part of our program, a professor of government at Harvard University, Polish-born Grzegorz Ekiert, is an expert on democratization in the former communist bloc. Ian Willoughby spoke to him about the region's recent past and possible future for this week's edition of One on One.
Grzegorz Ekiert is director of the Center for European Studies at Harvard University. An expert on democratization, the Polish-born political scientist recently gave a talk at Prague's Václav Havel Library exploring the unravelling of the pro-European consensus in the Visegrad states and the major challenges facing the region. Our conversation, which took place prior to the UK's seismic Brexit vote, began with the issue of how ready for democracy Central and Eastern European states were when communism collapsed.
Well, we had an impression at that time that those countries were not ready at all, that after so many decades of communist rule and destruction of all the democratic traditions and institutions, the lack of civil society and so on, The common idea among intellectuals who were studying the region was that it will take many, many decades for those countries really to become democracies. Ralph Dahrendorf, said that probably in the most powerful way. He said, to have democracy in Eastern Europe, you need three things. You need to have democratic institution, and that can be done very quickly. You put the lawyers together and you will write democratic constitution in a year or so. Then you need to have market economy, and this will take maybe 10 years. But then you need civil society, and it will take a generation. So he was thinking that maybe in 60 years those countries are ready for democracy. Of course, we know that this was not true. At least some of those countries really democratize very fast and build credible democratic institutions with quite amazing speed. And also they moved very swiftly to a market economy, and we discovered that that those East Europeans who never had the tradition under the communist rule very quickly adopted to that kind of situation and were quite successful.
If we accept that a lot of the potential to become and remain fully fledged liberal democracies hasn't been really fulfilled by some of these countries, can we say when and how things started to go wrong?
So the first thing which should be mentioned is that we start to see the decline after those countries joined the European Union. And I think this is not an accidental thing. It's not about the joining of the European Union per se, but it's about the loss of the big collective project. Those societies for a number of years were having one after another huge challenges which needed to be solved. First was to extricate themselves from the communist system, then to build democracy, then to build market economy, then to join Europe, which was a very complicated affair with adjustments of various kinds and so on. So these were huge projects. And suddenly, after 2004, there were no projects anymore. Those societies were thought, okay, you accomplished incredible things and now relax and enjoy. And of course, this is not a good idea. Societies need projects. Societies need challenges to be dynamic, to be entrepreneurial and so on and so on. So I think the nationalists use that vacuum of big ideas and debates about the future and stepped in with the nationalistic ideologies, with populist economic ideas, and are turning those countries back in quite significant ways. So that's number one. And number two, of course, is the issue of the crisis of the European Union. The project, European integration project for the last four or almost five decades was kind of invincible. There were no idea that this can be stopped at a certain point. And suddenly the very complicated crisis, which started in 2009, really put the whole project in doubt. And that opened the space for those critics of the European integration, for people who don't like the European ideas, people who don't like liberal politics. They sense the opportunity. And what you see in countries both of Western and Eastern Europe today are those movements and groups far left in the Western countries, far right in Central Europe, which are using that opportunity to build political support and to take governments like in Hungary and Poland in at least in those two specific cases.
Some people would say that a lot of citizens in countries like Poland or Hungary have benefited hugely from EU membership. Why aren't they thinking about that when they think about the European Union?
I think that that amount of benefits which was transferred from the West to the East is unprecedented in history. You look at the numbers and this is like 3% of GDP every year of the support. If you live in those countries and you remember how they looked 20 years ago, you see that this is a completely new world, and it was built not for the monies coming from these countries, but from the money from the European Union. I think that, of course, everything has something to do with politics, and I think that the politicians in Poland and in Hungary were not acknowledging that kind of support those countries were getting from the EU. Of course, you know, EU is a very easy target, both, again, as we see in Western Europe, and in England and in Central Europe today, it is very easy to criticize and belittle, and there is a lot of people who specialize in doing this. So, yeah, I think in a way this is paradox, because no one benefited so much from relations with the European Union than countries of the new member states. And I think that when you look at the public opinion polls, 70% of people in Poland and pretty much the same number of people in Hungary are supportive of the European Union. When you listen to politicians, you think that no one is supporting the European Union, right? So I think there is the disparity between the public general support for Europe and the political elite's project, which becomes very much anti-European.
Is there a sense that there are some forces, like, for example, anti-Westernism, anti-Americanism, that were dormant for about, say, two decades, a decade and a half, and that they have somehow been reactivated in recent years, maybe even very recent years?
What is activated, really, is anti-liberalism. This is not really anti-American. You know, anti-Americanism is fashionable among you know, European intellectual elites, but it never had much ground in Central Europe. As a matter of fact, it was one of the sort of, you know, bonds of contention between East European and West European intellectuals in many debates which happened over the last 30 or 40 years. This is not anti-West, because at least, you know, countries like Hungary and Poland and, of course, Czech Republic and the Baltics were always in Western orbits. We were getting our, you know, cultural traditions from there, our art, our science, our medicine, and so on. So this is not your typical Russian idea of living in completely different civilization, but it is really pro West European part of the continent. But there are forces in those countries, quite significant, as we see today, which really don't like the liberal ideas. They don't like liberal market economies. They don't like liberal societies with inclusive political communities, with support for various styles of life and for various ethnic identities. People don't appreciate that kind of ideas. And very often, you know, as in case of Poland, the Polish Catholic Church steps in and really is very vocal against that kind of influences coming from the West to Poland as corrupting of the Polish national soul and undermining, you know, Catholicism and so on and so on. So this is anti-liberalism, not anti-Western type of ideas.
How much is the aggressive approach of Putin's Russia impacting politics in Central and Eastern Europe?
Oh, well, this is a very complicated story, right? Because you have traditionally various relationship between countries of Central and Southern Europe and Russia. So there is, you know, this long-standing, of course, disagreement and conflict between Poles and Russians. I mean, not, I don't mean the nations, but really the governments. You don't have that in Bulgaria. You don't have this in Slovakia. So this is one level of diversity which exists. On the other hand, what Putin has done over the last couple of years with invading Ukraine and annexing Crimea is the flagrant violation of all the treaties which have been signed over the last since the end of the Second World War and the biggest geopolitical challenge Europe has been facing. So there is that element in it. And of course, you know, any decent democratic government should be condemning that kind of reversal in managing international affairs in Europe. You know, very often some countries countries like Hungary today, for example, are trying to play the Russian cards just to annoy the European Commission and Germany and so on. So the Russian card is played variously by various countries. But as a matter of fact, what Putin is doing in Europe today is endangering European stability and should be treated with utmost concern.
It's a little bit difficult for me to ask my final question because the Brexit vote hasn't happened yet and this interview is going out afterwards. But do you have a sense that Europe these days is really on the ropes?
Anyone watching European politics has that sense. I think the moment when one of the key countries of the European Union is contemplating the exit from the European Union, this is something which should concern everyone. The one thing is certain, regardless of whether the Brits will stay or go, this is going to be a very different European Union a decade from now than it is today. And I think if Central European countries are not careful enough, they may well land up in the wrong side of that new European Union.
If the Brits do vote to leave the EU, is there a danger of some kind of domino effect with other countries also at least considering leaving the EU?
I don't think so, because places which received billions of dollars from the European Union are not likely to exit. The commitment of Germany to the Union is firm and solid, and I can't imagine that they could say goodbye to the European Union. France and Italy or Spain do not have really credible policy to survive outside of the European Union. So no, I don't think so. But I think that we are going to have a union which will be very much divided. That union is going to have a core, and that core will be centered at the Eurozone. And this union is going to have the peripheries, which probably will end up very badly. Really, what is the challenge for Central Europe, for Visegrad 4 at this point, is to make sure that they will be at the core of the European Union, because being at this periphery will not be a pretty thing politically and will be damaging economically.
Political scientist Grzegorz Ekiert was Ian Willoughby's guest on that edition of One on One. And that brings us to the end of today's programme here on Radio Prague. If you have any comments about today's programme, then please send them to us. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz or on Facebook and Twitter. We'll be glad to hear from you. But that's all for now from me, Ruth Frankova. Thank you very much for joining us and goodbye.